to Raven Conversations. I'm Major Kelly Kianis.
And I'm Major Laura Dutton. And we're here today with the second part of our female leadership panel. And today we'll be interviewing our two senior female leaders in the Washington Army National Guard as part of our special spotlight on Women's History Month. And we'd like to introduce our special guests today.
I am Command Sergeant Major Amy Patterson. I am from the 56th Theater Information Operations Group over on JBLN. I am also Senior Enlisted Advisor at the Counter Drug Program full-time. Ma'am?
I am Colonel Angie Gentry. I am the current Director of Joint Operations for that awesome domestic operations mission that we also have. I have been in for 23 years now, total service, and excited to be here.
Well, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us here today. Both of you have had incredible careers so far. And it's been several decades. Let's talk about...
I know.
Several decades, ma'am.
It's been a long time. But let's go back to the initial decision. What was your initial decision that made you want to join the military?
If I'm being honest with you, my initial decision is it was very random for me. I went and talked to a recruiter, and basically the recruiter, for lack of better words, was like, hey, I got this MOS, and if you sign up, you can get $8,000, right? I didn't really know anything about the military. I grew up in a very small town. Like, when I say small town, like, my mom's teachers were my teachers. My aunt's teachers were my teachers. Mm-hmm. So when he said $8,000, 88 mic, hook, line, and sink.
Okay.
So that's it.
Yes. And did you have anybody in your family? I know when we spoke to several junior leaders, quite a few of them, I was surprised, had some family ties to the military.
Both my grandfathers were in the military. My one grandfather was a B-52 pilot in the Air Force. And then my other grandfather was a Marine in the tractor platoon. And then I had a couple cousins that were in the Navy still. Well, one is in the Navy now serving.
Do you feel like that informed or influenced your decision in any way?
Not really. Both my grandfathers didn't talk about their military service. They came from a different generation. We knew about it, but it wasn't the kind of stuff that was talked about. So, just experiences. So, yeah.
And did you have any idea what you were getting into as an 88 mic?
No idea. But I loved it. You know what? I grew up, I was a tomboy growing up. I loved being with the boys. I loved doing all the things, shooting, just all the things. So nothing, it just, there was no downfall to it, I guess.
Did you think about any other careers, or were you introduced to any other careers, or was it like, hey, $8,000 in this one?
You know, boom. I actually started taking some classes at Bates Technical College because I thought I wanted to be a dental assistant.
Okay.
I took this accounting class, and I just remember sitting in there, and it was like these giant white computers, right? You know, the old, like,
yes,
ones from several generations ago, ma'am?
We do.
and I remember sitting in that class thinking, like, what am I doing? Not doing it. So it was just, actually, it was like 3 weeks later, joined and enlisted. So.
Steph Sarmeech, from our previous podcast, she was also an 88 mic. And one of the things she said from her experience was... there was zero representation like herself in the cadre and the leadership of 88 Mike School. Do you remember the similar things?
So, I was the only female going through, not a basic training, but I was the first class to be held. I was supposed to go to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I ended up being the first class to go to Fort Bliss, Texas. So it was kind of a beta run. We were there with the ADA cycles. So we were like, when we got there, we were a, this is so crazy. A hold under. Like, they held us back for 3 weeks for the ADA cycles to finish. And then we worked out of these warehouses with the prisoner. There's like work release prisoners at Fort Bliss. So we spent the first 3 weeks at Fort Bliss doing work, like working, cleaning toys and things like that. And then The toy, they did, Fort Bliss does this Operation Santa, Op Santa, where they go and they collect toys from the community. Mm-hmm. And then AIT students and the work release inmates go together and you just clean toys, repair toys, and then they do like these giant toy drives things. So, but yeah, there was a couple females in the ADA cycles, the 14 Juliets. And then as far as 88 Mike, it was just me. Our class was small. I think it was only 16.
Wow.
A lot of time in the desert driving trucks. So, yeah.
Ma'am? Same question?
Well, she makes fun of those big computers and finances, but she's extremely great with numbers and finances. So I will start with, let's touch a little bit on the zero representation, because same. So I grew up as a military brat. Also very much so a tomboy. Like, I was always out, and it helped to have an older brother. I hung out with him and his friends far more than I ever hung out with the little girls on my streets, because I always wanted to be in the mud, in the woods, just doing, you know, it was part of, like, who I was. But not having zero representation, I was joking with my staff the other day about how I need to, like, in my retirement speech, I need to thank, like, James Cameron from, like, the movie Aliens for having strong female leads like Lieutenant Ripley and, right? Like, and Corporal Farrow and Private, what's her name, Vasquez, for being such strong female leads. Because who did we have to look at to say, oh, my gosh, look at these female leaders in a military setting? Because you also didn't see military leaders in general. So even as a military brat growing up, it was hard to find that representation. So that was what we looked up to, right, in our generation. But neither here nor there. So being a military brat, I was completely against joining the military, period. I was absolutely adamant about that I was not going to join the military because my father was combat arms. He was gone a lot. We were active duty, so we moved every few years. And that was okay when I was a kid. It was not okay when I was in middle and high school. It became very emotional for me. So that was what I remembered when I was graduating high school, going into college. But I was also, I call it geek chic. I was also that kid that was super nerd, always trying to get, you know, the best grades. And I always knew I wanted to go to college. That was always kind of embedded into me as well. And so as I was coming out, my mom was like, have you considered ROTC? I was like, no, because every kid fights against whatever their parent recommends. Yeah. So I didn't apply for the ROTC scholarship, none of it, because I'm not joining the military. Then I got to the University of Washington, and I saw my first bill. Really? I said,
How about
I consider some other options? So I was a walk-in at the University of Washington ROTC program. And in all actuality, it was probably one of the best things that I could have ever done. I went and visited the other services. Army felt like home, given that I grew up as an Army brat. And it just took. And what's I love about it is that I was just an athlete. You know, most of us are athletes growing up. And when you don't go from high school to college athlete or athleticism or teens, you don't realize how much you miss being part of a team. You forget how much you miss wanting to strive for that goal and that, you know, that greater, you know, teamwork goal together. And the Army ROTC program was like the perfect fit in all the things I just mentioned. Being a tomboy, loving the rough and tough, being an athlete, wanting to get out there, but then also having instinctively probably some leadership tendencies, but not realizing that's what they actually were. So that's how I ended up in the military. I needed the college money.
Yeah, $8,000.
So you yeah. both did it for the money. Okay.
I mean, we got to be honest. That's how we got hooked.
$8,000 is a lot of money.
You know, none of the junior leaders we just interviewed said anything about money. So
interesting.
No.
Different motivators. What did your family think when they heard you were joining?
Well, and oddly enough, my mom was completely for it, because what's odd about our relationship with our parents is my parents never tried to encourage my brother to go into the military, but they did me. And I didn't understand that until actually I came back from war and we had a sit down conversation. And they're like, but Angie, you were the kid that we knew was strong in this area and we knew that you would be successful. So that's why when you joined, for us, it was like, of course she would choose the military. They were just glad that I decided to do that and support the family by not putting all of us at greater debt trying to get through my college degree. First generation college student, my brother and I, and so a lot of us had to learn the hard way what it really took to to get that four-year degree, right? And many of us had to come out, unfortunately, with student loans regardless. So,
and did your brother join?
They were proud.
Did your brother end up joining?
No, he didn't. He couldn't because medically he had two dislocated hips over the course of his sports career. So he wouldn't have been eligible even still. He totally would have. And actually, when we went to, when the war in Iraq kicked off, he's like, man, I just want to go so I can be with my sister. I'm like, that's not quite how it works. but I understood where he was coming from, right? And so, yeah, he totally would have if he could have, but it just wasn't in the stars for him medically.
Okay. Yeah. And what year did you commission?
2000.
And what was your branching choice like?
Oh, great question. Let's talk about this is a mentorship moment. Mm-hmm. So my cadre actually discouraged me, believe it or not, for putting MI as one of my top choices. I was a phenomenal student and high school student with near straight A's throughout most of my career. Not so much when I got to college. I was had a little bit more reprieve, and ROTC was tough. Like, you have another class and you're tired. I had scholarships, but UW at the time was one of the only schools in Washington that didn't offer housing as part of your scholarship.
Oh, wow.
So, exactly. And living in Seattle was the greatest expense, yeah. not mm-hmm. the tuition. And back then, we didn't get the monthly stipend.
Wow.
And we only got a $150 book stipend. So I still had to work. And I worked not one job, but two jobs sometimes at a time while being in ROTC, carrying the extra academic load as well as the normal three classes in college. So I was tired most of my college career, let's just say that. but it was great. It was a refining period of my life. So in all actuality, I had to work a little bit harder financially to make ends meet in order to get through that portion of my school. But remind me what the...
We're talking about branching.
Yeah, so branching. So, and I say that to say my cadre, forgive me, middle age, my cadre discouraged me from choosing MI or selecting MI because of my grades at the time. And they were like, oh, I don't know if you're going to make the cut. And typically MI officers are like 3.5 and above students and all these things, right? So I actually put Adjutant General as my first choice, MI as my second choice, just for funsies, because I can wish. Funsies. And then I don't even remember what 3, 4, or 5 or whatever that was. And when branching came out, sure enough, they selected me to be MI.
It was meant to be.
I know, it's meant to be.
But at that time...
I don't even think I got options. I think I'm pretty certain it was just $8,000, 88 mic.
Yeah.
I didn't even question it. I think I just said yes.
Yeah, I believe it.
Because that's when we were talking to the younger soldiers. They didn't have that list of prohibited. Like, when I joined, there were the MOSs I could not join. And also when I branched, there were the branches I could not branch. So, and we also remember, you know, when you branch, number one in the class usually gets branch of choice. And it's like, it doesn't matter. You're not going that branch. Because, and also there was the assumption, you know, branch of choice is going to want to go infantry. So, you know, how did that look in your class? You know, because you weren't, there was still the time when we couldn't go infantry.
Correct.
Or maneuver or many of those branches.
Correct. And the only even combat arms or close to combat arms was field artillery at the time, where females at the time could branch FA. But yeah, and honestly, we just said these were the ones that we couldn't, and these were the ones that we could, and we just selected and did our order and merit list in that manner. I don't think there was a whole thought process behind why can't I, to be completely honest.
Right. There was no question.
There was
just this is this.
This
and,
is this.
You know, they just didn't even have that question at all.
It was kind of fun to watch them struggle a little bit to answer that question because that's something they've never experienced. Like, I'm one of those people who for sure it was very much informed my decision on what I wanted to do in the military, because I probably would have been one of those people who went a more combat direction with my career, but it wasn't, you know, an option for me. So I chose military police because the recruiters were like, well, hey, if you want to like be close to combat, this is the closest a female is ever going to get to combat, which is military police. So that was kind of the driving force behind my decision. But to like hear these younger females just be like, I've never thought about
sky's
that.
The limit.
I'm like, what? That's so cool.
Nobody's limiting me.
Yeah.
Sky's the limit.
Like, what? It's like ocean, yeah.
But it's all relative, though, right? Because of time and place of when we joined and the environment that we grew up. And, it's a different time, and I love it, you know, progression.
Yeah, and so we look at our careers in the past 20 years. There's been some significant changes, just socially as well as, you know, politically and in the military. What are some of the most significant changes you've seen?
I'll start with it's a better time and place to be pregnant in the military. Oh. The maternity paternity policies, right? I remember I was on active duty when I had my first child, one of three total children. And that experience compared to my second and third, having my kids in the Washington National Guard, vastly different. And so to see the policies change to support mothers and fathers through that period of life is huge. And then our grooming standards.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. Hey. Yeah. All for safety, right? I'm all for professionalism.
Yeah.
All for keeping a solid standard, because I think we need to represent ourselves very well and very professionally. But, you know, small things like it, I hate to say it, but it feels great as a female to put on a couple studs in the morning just to have that little fine touch. So I think that's an improvement, as long as we're safe and professional at the right time and place for what the mission entails. So in Garrison, it's nice to be able to let her hair down, literally.
You know, we talked about, like, how we could still continue to improve and, like, what was the 1% better we could make it. And one of the concepts that came up was, you know, creating a military where people could be seen. And I think, you know, just allowing some of those small grooming standard changes have allowed people to feel just a little more personal, a little more seen. And I think it's making a difference.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. And I think it's going to be good for even recruitment, right? I mean, it's the small things that people don't realize. I can write a book, and I've said this before, on the journey of my hair in the military, right? And that could be, you know, being a female. That could be, you know, the ethnic twist to my, you know what I mean, touch to my own hair, and then just how difficult it has been in desert environment versus garrison environment. You know, growing your hair out, cutting it, those are all decisions that we all have to make. Yeah, we all have to make. And hygiene is a thing, too. So it's been a challenge. So it's nice to see some of those things change for the better, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, my brain is just, like, spinning right now, because you just, like, kind of, like, these feel like such, like, nuancey things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you're right. Like, even I've been in since 2011, and the number of times just, like, the wear and appearance regulation has changed, specifically, especially with, like, female haircuts. Yes. and hairstyles. Like, you want to talk about the evolution of, like, a more inclusive environment. Oh, like, man. It's a weird parallel, but you're absolutely correct. Like, to show how far we've come. Because I think some of those policies have been used a little bit in the past, too, to kind of, like, well, you don't look professional enough, like, sorry.
Be a little exclusive.
Yeah, little bit exclusive. For sure. And those things actually do matter, even though they seem like they don't. Okay. Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. So we also talk about your careers, and in your, you know, in the past 20 years, you've also had a lot of life things happen as well. You know, you've had incredible careers, but you also have families. Your kids are getting ready to go to college. You have built the church, built the community. How have you felt the pressures to balance all of that?
I think it's evolved for me personally. Just because, so I've got, you know, my husband retired in the end of 17 from the military. He was AGR. We were both full-time for a period of time. We've got a 20-year-old in college right now.
Yes. Good luck, ma'am.
I know.
You know, we've got a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old at home. Between, I think, just trying to keep it all down. I mean, I'll just be very upfront. I mean, we struggled between deployments and TDYs, so we had fertility stuff, right? So trying to work through those things and the different cycles and all those things, mm-hmm. and still, you know, do all the things, that took us about 3 years to kind of find that balance, which was probably where we were at on threshold. I think from what it was with my daughter earlier on, I think I struggled more with it with her as far as keeping the balance. And I would say probably trying to prioritize. So I would say I didn't always prioritize, and I hate to say this out loud, but I didn't always prioritize. Looking back, hindsight, I can see that I didn't always prioritize my daughter because I felt such an obligation here to be able to provide for her. So that was a bit of a struggle for me, I think. With my boys, I think there's still a little bit of a balance that I struggle with because, you know, I mean, right now it's, we've got a ton of things going on in the 56. We've got stuff going on in counter drug. I'm taking, you know, an organic chemistry class because I have nothing more going on in my life. And I've got a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old. And so I think it's tough to balance. But I think for me, what I've learned with Haley, my daughter, is that I got to kind of keep it in perspective on what is most important. Some of the stuff, I think for me, I've had to learn, like, okay, this can wait till tomorrow. It's all going to be there tomorrow. I'm still a work in progress on that, for the record. But it's challenging because you want to do all the things. You want to, you know, you want to be competitive. You want to be successful. You want to, for me, a lot of it is just like, I genuinely care. I genuinely want to help people. I want to make things better. And so the balance, it's a hard one to do. It's just, like I said, just kind of keeping things in perspective, and sometimes my husband will check me. but you know, it's a balance.
But looking back, you know, especially 20 years ago, maybe, give 20-year you a little bit of grace and generosity that maybe that environment was a little bit less likely to give you.
It was definitely different, yeah.
Yeah, that environment was a little less hospital for a mom back then.
Yeah, it was different.
I can only imagine. Like, what would you say, you know, because that's a pretty big gap in time.
Yeah.
How much different was it to be a mom in the military the second round?
Well, I got 84 days of maternity leave, so that was super.
And what about the first time?
I got 8 weeks. I'd have a C-section the first time, so, well, all times, but it was, but even at that, I struggled with that particular one. Had a lot of things go wrong at Madigan. So I think that it went by so fast, and then it's like, boom, back to work, and it's, you know, just, it was different. So with the boys, I had the time, and I was almost ready to come back to work, if that makes sense. Not because I was ready to leave my boys, but I needed to kind of plug back in and have a focus. I don't do well with idle time.
No, that's really good. And let's not forget that Sergeant Major commutes from the east side. Mm-hmm. She lives, you know, on the east side with her family. And commutes.
She likes the challenge.
She likes the challenge, so...
I actually live in Idaho. It's about a 6-hour commute every place. Yeah.
And I think sometimes we have to be careful with the term superwoman because we are, what has made us successful is that we want to be everything for everybody and we want to do our very best, right? And so that's a good thing, but it can also be, make it more challenging to find that balance because you just can't do that. And a lot of times we try to compliment ourselves by using terms like that. And that's a good thing, only if you understand what your limits are, right? So I'll start off with what we did well, and then I'll, because it is an evolution. That's a great term. Balance takes time, and it is an evolution. So I credit a lot of coming off of active duty. My husband and I, you know, we had a life-changing moment where he felt called into ministry, so we had to now alter our lives to support, you know, his calling, and then... I came off active duty because we realized like active duty lifestyle was not going to fit what we want to do in ministry. I was also, just had my first child. Micah was 6 weeks old when I looked at him and like, something's got to change, right? Because I had a couple of deployments that were staring us in the face and the whole mental and emotional, everything that we were going through, was very challenging to us to have an infant now, a husband in ministry, and then, you know, life change. So we took a huge, and this was because we felt convicted to do so. We took a huge faith step and said, we're leaving active duty. no plans on the back end of what we were going to do, but we knew that this was what, you know, God called us to do. So I graciously ended up stumbling into the Washington National Guard because I happened to be in a book club with the officer strength manager for the Guard at the time. It was awesome. So, and at the time, Delta Company 341st, which is now, you know, well, Delta Company, which was Bravo Company back then, drilled on Friday and Saturday night. And so, because I told her, I was like, my husband's going to ministry. I can't drill on Sundays. She's like, well, I got this unit that drills on Friday, Saturday. And I was like, who would have ever guessed, right? So, you know, and end up stumbling into the Guard, finding a home here and finding a magnificent way to continue service. You know, something I love to do, didn't want to walk away from being an MI officer, didn't want to walk away from time in service, let alone like everything that I enjoyed about it, only to find a phenomenal unit and group of individuals and professionals that I just wanted to continue to strive with. And so that turned out to be a blessing for us. But I say that to say we had to determine what our priorities were. And our priorities were ministry, our family, right? And then work and everything else came after that. That has challenged us to make some hard decisions based on pure faith to see where we were going to go, right? We would exercise wisdom, we'd pray for wisdom, but it's still, you know, a challenge. And so that has paid dividends for us as a family. And I say that because not everything has monetary value to it. A lot of times we'll chase dreams because it'll pay us more. It'll give us more things that we can tangibly see or touch. But everything that we have enjoyed about taking that huge faith step, you can't put monetary value to it, to include what I've gained from being a member of the Guard, right? Not only the relationships, the professional development, but I'm here. I would have never guessed that I would ever be an 06 in the military, in the Army, doing what I love, still to this day, in the in the freaking presence of these phenomenal people that I wholeheartedly feel are lifelong friends now, in an organization serving in a way that better fits not only my family, but my own personality, right? I wasn't accustomed to having to leave my community every few years, you know, by the time I became a certain age. And this has been awesome. I've raised my entire family. We've established a ministry in the same community that I gave birth to my child in. So it's been an amazing journey. But balance. Now I'll start transitioning now to the hard lesson that I learned. When I was a young major, I hit a wall, and I was ready to give up on everything and everybody except for the three children I had given birth to by that time, because I felt like they didn't choose, right? Like the few people I could have allegiance to were these three children, because I felt like too much. And it wasn't until I had to do my I can't remember what they call anymore. We have to write out your life stressors on a time frame. You have to go back and write all your life stressors. Until I realized I hit like five life stressors all at once and didn't manage that well, you know, or realize that enough to pace myself better. So we planted a church. Sounds great if you know what I mean, if you're a little bit more mindful. Started a new job, right? Had our third child. My husband was on his second master's degree. You know what I mean? All these things happen all at once. So it's no surprise that a year later, I was ready to like give up on everything. And I don't give up. We don't give up. That's why we're successful. We're not bred to give up. So imagine the amount of like, it took a long time for me to forgive myself for even feeling this way. And it was only a span of 3 to 6 months, but it felt like I had failed almost because I didn't want to do any of it anymore. And I thankfully submitted myself to counseling. And thankfully, my counselor said, imagine yourself on a pendulum where your life has all of your selflessness over here and everything that's selfish over here. You're almost too far to the selfless side, because I was doing everything for everybody. I was trying to be the best mom, the best wife, the best, you know, soldier, the best officer, the best leader, you know, the best pastor's wife, you know, all of those things, trying to do it all to the point where I wasn't even taking care of myself. I wasn't having those selfish moments. Go get a manicure, pedicure, right? Take a walk. Dude. Because every bit of my energy from sunup to sundown was spent on giving myself to everyone else. So I snapped. And then thankfully, I submitted myself to counseling. And then spiritually was the most significant, probably spiritually cleansing moment of my life. The greatest part of my life testimony. Because after that, I started to see life a lot differently, started to see people differently, far more empathetically. because I was one of those good kids. Like, I never did anything wrong, right? Like, good grades, you know, great athlete.
I can't relate to you, ma'am.
I was a parent's dream, yeah. Right? Like, I wasn't getting in trouble. I just didn't have those bends. I just naturally didn't have a whole lot of, you know, excessive bends. And so for me to snap and for me to fail was really hard. I went through probably a 2-year now self-forgiveness, learning how to forgive myself in that everyone falls. And I started looking at people differently, far more empathetically. And it was now a better place of finding balance. Now I start to feel that tinge when I can see it in my child's eyes if they need time. You know, I could see it in, you know, a coworker. I feel like a little bit better. I'm not perfect by no means. Please don't let me picture myself as though I'm a saint. I am not. But it took me to fall, and I embraced failure now in a whole different aspect. And I was sitting in actually a commissioning ceremony, and I heard a speaker say, success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm or excitement, something to that effect. And they don't even know who to attribute the quote to. But something about that set my heart at ease. And then another lady said, you know, if you're looking for coming out of failure, if you're looking for forgiveness to feel like something, forgiveness is a choice. You have to choose to forgive yourself. You have to choose to forgive others that have hurt you. Choose to forgive what brought you to this place of wanting to snap, right? And not expecting everyone to see you in a way that you see yourself, right? Not expecting that you know, it's nice to thank you. You know, thank you. Because we'll go 100 miles per hour off of a quick...
Call that emotional intelligence.
You know, yes. What? But if you don't get it, then you start to realize, like, why do I need that so much? You know, but you also, we're really challenged to communicate that to the people in our lives that love us. Because a lot of times they'll say, she's got it, because she always has it. But that doesn't mean it's easy for her. And understanding that, but communicating to your spouse especially, hey, I'm struggling right now, or hey, I don't have it, right, is an emotional intelligence that we have to grow to find balance, because otherwise you won't find that balance.
You like just got me, especially that last part, got me thinking about, like, number one, two of the best like leaders I ever worked for in the military, the things that they excelled at were saying thank you, because you forget in this environment, like, how much you don't hear that, especially like prior to working for one of the individuals. Like, I was company commander, deployed to Afghanistan, very stressful situation all around. And then to work in an office environment where my direct supervisor constantly said thank you for, like, benign stuff was like, whoa, right? But you also got me thinking a little bit about, like, the characteristics of, like, just quality senior leaders in our organization and those characteristics that you need. And when I think about and look at some of the senior, especially the female leaders in this organization, they kind of all have these, like, same qualities. Like, I would probably describe all of you as extremely intelligent, very assertive, and extremely hardworking. And both of you were just talking a lot about, like, balance. And I was just kind of wondering, like, how much of that, like, those qualities do you feel like are something that you, like, either just kind of grew up with or had an influence as a child or you developed over time in the military or, you know, kind of on the topic of women in the military? Do you feel like there are certain skills that you specifically had to develop because you were of a minority, you know, working your way through the ranks? You know what I mean? Like, I sometimes feel like as a female in the military, you do have to be a little bit more assertive. And I just wonder,
where
do you guys see, like, those qualities? Because you guys were both just speaking a lot about, like, having to be resilient, having to be assertive and finding balance. Like, is that something, a learned thing from your experience in the military? Or is that just something that, like, you have, you know?
That's a good question. I don't know. For me, I feel like it's just something I kind of learned just trying to figure it out, right? Like, how do I still do the thing when I have this other thing that I need to do? And I think that's been the struggle, is just keeping that balance, finding the balance. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I would agree,
I think
though.
There's people that you come across, too, though, that you see right. and you're like, wow, look at that. Like, you know, Star Major West, right?
Yes,
like,
very much.
You look at people like that and you see just they touch everything, right? They touch everybody around them. And you're like, those are really, like, I think it's just things that you see that you want to emulate, that you want to kind of strive for to kind of make you better. And, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I would concur greatly. I think there is much that is learned. There's stuff that we come into with instinctively, I think, but much of it is absolutely learned. You know how people will say you learn from good leaders and bad leaders?
Mm-hmm.
Learn the kind of leader you want to be and then the kind of leader that you don't, right? And sometimes having those bad moments, you know, even in your military career where you have to deal with some difficult personalities, teaches you a lot about right?
Looking at me for that.
Teaches you a lot about the leader that you want to be, but maybe
sure
that person, but maybe that person is put into your life, right? I don't think anything happens out of nowhere, right? So maybe that person is put into your life to help shape and mold you for who you are going to be one day for
sure.
your soldiers and for the people that are in under your care, and that's okay for me. Sucks. Oh, forgive me. Is that a bad word?
No, you can
bleep it out. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to, I just came out of a kind of a difficult situation. So I would say, but in due time, it's shaping and molding maybe the next generation, you know? And so nothing is just for the moment. It's absolutely, there's a bigger picture.
When we were talking to the junior leaders, one of the things that came up is we were admiring, like, some of the mindsets that they're growing up with and how they're starting to question things. Mm. Like, when we grew up, one of the concepts we grew up with was the comment, ladies, you can have it all. Where, you know, you can have the job and the family and the career and all these things.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, yeah. And it was the triad.
I didn't have that Barbie doll.
You know, you had to be the exceptional everything. And I like the fact that we're questioning, you know, no, I can take, you know, I don't have to be exceptional at everything. We don't have to have that standard so high that no one else can reach that bar. And that we can take, you know, we can have priorities and we can, you know, focus on smaller things or, you know, have career and especially in the Guard
yes.
where, you know, a lot of, you know, the portion of us at our AGR can have the, you know, the privilege of focusing on the Guard career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the average Guard soldier, they're focusing on an M-Day career. And especially younger ones, they're at a time when they're focusing on, you know, those new times in life, like graduating college, getting a new career, sometimes starting a new family, like a lot of things all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to understand the way that they balance, prioritize, and handle that pressure of not really feeling like they have to excel at all of it, it's really remarkable to watch. And to see that, like, those boundaries come up professionally.
It's interesting to me, too, because it's, you know, generationally, like, there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? From just I see it all the time just in talking with junior soldiers and just kind of, you know, sensor checks and things like that is you just, you know, ask a simple question and you'd be surprised at the answers you get.
Mm.
And it's helpful to have that understanding, that perspective, I think, for me anyways.
Yes.
I mean, I would definitely value that. But it's just interesting, the differences in generations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's exciting, though, right?
It is.
Like, their viewpoint, to me, is encouraging. Like, it challenges me to be like, that's right. Like, we don't have to stay in this box, right? Like,
yeah.
we can think bigger and broader. And, I mean, even our children.
Yeah.
I look at them and I'm like, man, your world is bigger than mine was. And that's the goal, right? Generation to generation, that
yeah.
it gets a little bit more open and the opportunities are there for them. So it's really encouraging.
Yeah, we were commenting on how, like, you know, for such, like, newer service members in their career, just kind of starting off, how, like, introspective they were about, you know, thinking through all of the possibilities and opportunities that they have. And I was like, you know, man, like, to a certain extent, like, maybe we didn't have some of the same vocabulary they did, you know,
yeah.
and where they can sit there and, like, call stuff out and be like, oh, well, you know, that's messed up. And you're like, holy crap. Like,
that is messed up.
And I just was like, never, just because that's the way it's always been.
Because you were, and you were taught to just, this is what you do, and you do it.
Our creativity was limited by, we didn't have a word to express that.
Right. That's right.
That's what I mean, though, the difference in the generation. And I'm interested to see how the conversation went on the other, because I mean, the insight there is, it's just, it's a perspective.
And to make time for themselves that early on. Yes. And to take, you know, to prioritize things differently. But
to be willing to take a knee instead of run yourself ragged.
I could have processed that.
Yeah.
I know. All there.
Well, because we were all taught that we have to be in the grind to succeed, right? So we're go. But
I know, it's like, done with this school, sign me up for the next school. What's the next thing I can do?
Yeah. What's my next goal? Yeah. What's my next goal?
Like, I have 3.5 hours. I can take a new class. Yeah.
Yes. But let's give ourselves credit to the fact that just like the people that came before us, they had to go through a lot of difficulty to set the foundation for us to be here, to be even talking about the things that we're talking about. And same, like, we laugh about that. We see the hope. I hope that the former generations looks at us and like, wow, look at them. I would have loved to have been in their, be in their shoes right now. So
given the position you're in now and you kind of seeing all the younger folks coming up, like, how long do you think it'll be until we see like a female Raven 6 or Raven 7? Like,
so you're talking to the most optimistic person in the world. I think we're danger close. I really do. I think about, there's a couple of folks, in my mind right now, that they are phenomenal human beings, they're phenomenal leaders, and they have all the potential in the world to potentially compete against a role like that. We have a female, second now, female land component sergeant major, right?
Like, yeah.
The state level leaders, you know, and Sergeant Major Abby West, you know, she broke that mold for us. So I think representation, as we all talked about, you know, absolutely matters. And we now need to grasp the fact that we are people that should give the younger generations hope. And I know that we take that very seriously in how, you know, who we are to this day. So,
you know, what's interesting is I think about this and, I agree with you. But you know, one of the competing interests is just the difference in generation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have the organization as a whole has extremely talented people. And like you said earlier, you know, it's like, I can actually just focus on this, right? Where I know, you know, in our organization, we've got highly intelligent people, right? Like, with the retirement system, the way that it is, the blended retirement, the match and all those things, it's what I would be interested to see is where does it go, right? Because when there's so much competition, like, it's competitive, you know, the civilian world versus the military, the balance, all those things. I would be very curious to see. I mean, I've kind of looked across and I've kind of looked to see kind of where we're at as far as females go. You know, who's next in the pipeline? What are we doing to develop, sort of thing? And when you look at it, I think there's some competition. And I don't just mean in the Guard, but the civilian sector, the different opportunities that are out there. So I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how the future evolves.
And here's my concern, is that typically mid-grade, that's when we want to walk away, because that's when we're starting families. That's when we're on our probably second degree. That's when your corporate or outside civilian job is taking root and you're starting to progress very quickly. And I think it's difficult, and you know, to find that balance to say, do I still want to serve in the Guard? And there's sometimes like that lump that you just have to get through, right, in order to continue motion. Like, I took a knee when he hit my wall, and I was in a non-professionally development assignment. I got, you know, like mid-grade OER, and I felt weird. Like, but I needed to take a doggone knee for the sake of my own mental and physical, emotional health, and for the sake of my family. And that's okay. And we have to, again, be able to accept those moments. But this is where I feel like mentorship is key. Like, and it frustrates me, to be honest, when I hear people kind of shun, like, oh, why is there a female mentorship group? Like, why does it have to be a thing? Well, there are some specific things that we can address as a community. And that's how we can recruit better. That's how we can retain better. That's how we can share, you know, some very specific challenges that we go through. You know, the spouse relationship, you know, is can be different. The hygiene stuff can be different. I mean, there's a lot of getting through pregnancies. Like, we both have had multiple C-sections. There's no shame in saying any of that. Mm-hmm. And we both have had to rock our PFT at the time, and now ACFTs, moving forward. We can do it, but that takes a little bit closer hold of a mentorship and give each other hope and give each other encouragement. And so that's where I think sometimes these more intimate, you know, support groups can come in handy. And I think sometimes we push it aside because we don't want our peers to think that we're trying to build an exclusion zone, and we're not. Mm-hmm. If anything, we're trying to bring about greater diversity by having some of these smaller support groups so that we can blend better into the greater good and the greater group at whole.
Mm-hmm. When, you know, last conversation we talked about, like, as leaders, we want to have our impact on things. We want to make things at least 1% better when we leave. We talked about some of the changes we've already seen. What's the 1% better you still want to make things, and specifically through the lens of the Women's History Month?
I think that, I mean, I'll just speak on the side of the 56. I think some of the things that I've been trying to achieve is, you know, kind of an equitable platform as far as some of our leadership positions. And I think that we've done a pretty good job. You know, we have... I mean, how many, there's what, Sergeant Major LaBlanche, mm-hmm. myself, mm-hmm. CSM-wise, there's two female CSMs in the state. Sergeant Major LaBlanche is a battalion CSM. We've got kind of a good core functioning group over there, where I feel like, how do I say this? I feel like the dynamic that we have going with our male and female counterparts is very inclusive. You know, like, I mean, I'll tell you, I feel very lucky. I feel like I work with, you know, my family, mutual respect, good communication, just the way they treat each other. I think that I haven't actually seen that before. And I think in the last, and Major K, you can kind of attest to it. I mean, everybody brings something to the table. Everybody's valued. Everybody's, you know, even newer leaders that have come in other kind of KD positions, for maybe the combat arms realm or, you know, just different backgrounds. There's just a level of, I guess what I would say is acceptance, mm-hmm. as a team. And I'll tell you, there's some synergy right now that I have not seen before. And it's a beautiful thing. So I think, I'm not trying to sound cheesy, but,
please sound cheesy.
I haven't seen that before. And that was kind of one of the things that I feel like it's bridging a gap. Mm-hmm. There's some emotional intelligence in that. There's a broader perspective, I think, when you can have those open conversations, the dialogue, with the group as a whole, and everybody's receptive, mutual respect, all the things. And I think that, you know, we've got female first sergeants, we've got female E9s, we've got, you know, male, counterparts, and it's just, there's some significant, the synergy is just amazing right now. So I don't know if that really answered your question.
I like
it. But I think having an opportunity to get to see that and just see the powerhouse of a team that it makes. I think that inside the organization, we feel it, but I also think that you can see it from the outside of the organization. So I don't know if that answers the question well.
You know, sometimes there are organizations that, you know, we know the organizations that have our heart, and we know how bad it hurts to leave them. And
yes,
I can tell them. I can tell them. You're in a position where you're like, you guys are good. I can leave you. You know, I can
you
see
were doing
you're
well.
Feeling that. Like, they're in a good spot.
That's good.
It is.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So,
it's nice to be able to look and see, like, all right, this is going to work out well. And, you know, being in an organization that you don't want to leave.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I do. I know the one that has my heart, too.
Yep. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that answered your question, but I think that it's the balance.
I'm going to say, really making a spot for everybody, and that inclusion was the 1% better that let everyone have a spot at that organization, has given them that synergy that's letting them go on.
Yeah. For sure.
It's an awesome thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I will say that we were at Colonel Casey DeGroove's promotion not long ago, and we got to take a picture.
Yeah.
Of myself, picture. Colonel Kristen Durda, Colonel Zara Walters, Colonel Teresa Winter, and it's the first time I get chills thinking about it in Washington National Guard history that we've had this many female O6s, and we were all like, holy cow.
It's the first time in my career I've seen that.
This is insane, right? And it was so encouraging. But I want more, and I want to see a bigger bench, and I want to see that bench, feel motivated and excited to be in uniform. And I have a contrast between being a young officer on active duty. I don't know how many times I had days where I said, I just want to be taken seriously, and I just want to be able to do my job. I don't want to deal with all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to do my job, and I do not want to discount the fact that there has been plenty of females who have had tragic moments, in their service and their time in the Washington National Guard. Please understand. But I have never felt like I could be myself and do my job and be taken, seriously as much as I have being in the Washington Army National Guard. This is my place. This is my home. This is my family. And I thank the Lord for allowing me to serve, because I enjoy it, and I haven't had to deal with a lot of the excess. Have I had to deal with? Yes. But relatively speaking, I have felt more safe than not, despite some of the nuances. I have literally had peers come up to me and say, oh, you only got that job because you're a minority female. Okay. If that's your opinion, great. Meanwhile, same peer didn't make the PT because they got drunk in their car, right? Like, so it makes me laugh. It makes me laugh that there's people that still have that perspective of you only because. But you have to be true to yourself and know, like, is that true? Or who are you? And you have to be confident in who you believe you are. And you have to silence those negative voices and hear the ones that are bringing you up. Because similar to how we struggle sometimes with diversity and understanding that we wouldn't even be at the table if it wasn't for the same people sometimes that we attack to bring us up. My male counterpart, we didn't have female leaders. We didn't have female O6s. There are some strong male O6s, and senior leaders, period, and NCOs that have said, no, ma'am, I think you have what it takes. Ma'am, I want to see you compete. Ma'am, I'm going to bring you into this job. I want to see you do this because I think you can. Those mentors, just as much as seeing the representation, have mattered significantly in my career. So I don't ever want to discount that. Diversity includes all of us. All of us to be willing to see one another, to see, where the potential is, and to say, nope, I'm bringing you up. I'm bringing you up. And I can safely say, and I know Sergeant Major can say, we have probably mentored and tried to bring up just as many males as we have females, right? Because we want to see the diversity. We are a better force. We are each other's yin and yang, right? And so I hope that's my one. I want to see more.
I think we pull.
I think you said that way more eloquently than I did, for the record. But that's really like the point that I was getting at, as far as like how the 56 is set up, right?
Yes.
Right? Like the yin and the yangs.
The yin and the yangs.
The synergy is there,
and I think if we pull
a beautiful thing.
The transcripts of the last two conversations, we're gonna see like several words and concepts
for
are
sure.
the same
for
in
sure
both in both conversations. So
yeah.
Well, Callie will attest to the fact that, I don't know if you've heard it, when I was an APMS at POU, we used to have Lady Loot Night, so it was our female mentorship, and it was just our opportunity to share kind of the female struggles and what to expect, especially for the ladies going on active duty, but then also our Guard and Reserve. And I always had this saying that I will never make excuse for being a female, and I will never use being a female as an excuse. And I'll start with the first part. So never make excuse for being a female. And this is Colonel Angie Gentry's beliefs and Angie Gentry's belief, right? Like, my God made me who I am, right? Strengths, weaknesses, it is an assault against his character for me to consider myself less than, right? So whether I'm more emotional, whether I'm more, you know, whether my mind works the way it works, whatever it is, he made me the way I was. I will never make excuse for that, right? But because I will use all of that to be the best of who I can be, no matter what organization, unit, you know, job, whatever. I will also not use being a female as an excuse, meaning I'm not going to, you know, cute my way through whatever. I'm not going to act like I'm too vulnerable. I'm going to be just as tough, just as capable, given the strengths that I have, right? I have physical limitations. I got it. Next to my male counterparts, I got it. But I'm going to be the strongest I can be, do the best I can be the sharpest, you know, whatever I can do to be that team member that you want to serve in the foxhole with.
That yin and yang, man.
And I'm going to grab you when I can see my weaknesses. I'm going to be mindful of my weaknesses and grab my yang and say, help me, right? So that we can have a full 360 in this foxhole, right? I mean, that I think that's what diversity should be. Mm-hmm. That's what it should be if we're willing to accept it. That's what a marriage should be. That's what, you know, our differences should unite to be. But we have to appreciate the fact that we all bring a different perspective, different experience. There will never be another Kelly. There will never be another Laura, right? We're all unique individually, but a lot of our life, you know, and gender or, you know, race, whatever it is, a lot of those experiences bring a different picture, bring a better worldview if we can embrace, you know, the strength of what diversity is.
Yeah, she said it, but way better than you did.
That's why we're here together.
Yin and yang, yin and yang, yin and yang.
We're going to get the t-shirt. Yeah.
All right, when we finish up with our last panel, one of the things we asked them, so once again, we're the Women His History podcast. We're looking through this through the female lens. We're going looking out to prospective applicants. And, you know, I tell the story. When I was in high school, when I was at RB, every time I had an invite to go to a high school, I went. Because when I was in high school, I would have never thought I would be in the Guard, or in the military period. None of my teachers, none of my family, none of my friends, no one would have thought I would have ended up in the military. And if a recruiter would have come in, I'd have been the one in the back making jokes and not paying attention because I wouldn't have thought that they had a single thing for me.
Yep.
And part of it is the, you know, if you can't see it, you can't be it representation. Yes. So, you know, I believe with 100% that there's a place for everyone in the Washington National Guard. And I want to have that representation and get out and have that message to people that know, you know, can come talk to us, consider it, because there is a place for you. And to get out and to start working against some of those stereotypes. But if you could reach out and talk to some of those females out there right now that don't think there's a place for them in the military and are scared. And, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff out there. And the reality is a lot of that is both negative and true. But we're working on it and working to make it better. What would you tell them?
I'll start with, if I can do it, you surely can do it. If you would have saw me as a cadet.
Right. If you would have saw me in high school.
Colonel Gentry would have not been what you thought I would. Yeah, if you would have saw me.
No, like you at PLE, you were like, listen, I'm going to tell you what not to do.
Okay? Right. And yeah, Kelly was the test to that. Like, when we had our Lady Loot nights, I would tell them, like, listen, I'm going to tell you guys everything that I did wrong. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I was very transparent because I don't want you to make the same mistakes that I did, right?
So it's perspective too, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to have honest conversations with people and just, you know, relate and just, I guess, yeah, that's a good question.
I would say in general, it's easy to be a victim to your world and your experiences. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of reasons to say why not. Mm-hmm. But if you find that reason to say maybe, I would push through that because there's something that's kind of drawing you to at least try. I mean, I feel like initial service obligations go by like so quick.
Yeah.
So fast.
I don't think people understand the power of service either.
Yes.
Like the empowerment that you get from public service something that a lot of people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Like every, you know, you got your $8,000.
I sure did.
You got your college scholarship.
Sure thing.
You know, ended up being more like 5,700. Yeah, we get all that. But that isn't why you stayed. You know, like the reason we stay is always so much deeper than that initial thing. And like, how do we get that message out?
Yeah, that's good.
So, okay. Well, we'll leave it on that. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for everything
you've
done. Thank you for the representation you've given us, as well as, you know, the members of the Washington Army National Guard.
Yeah, no, for real. Thank you for what you guys have done. I know we're trying to end this, but like, you're one of the first senior female leaders I met in this organization, and I feel so lucky, like the positive examples we have of just like stellar leaders just across the board, but specifically like female leadership. Like my first battalion command sergeant major was Abby West. Like,
yes.
How cool day one of the first people you meet is that individual, or you at my first full-time job. Like, we're so blessed.
Yeah. She was the first, I know we're trying to end this, but I'll just end
this. Yeah, for sure.
She was my platoon sergeant when I came back from AIT. Oh. She was the first, like, exposure that I had to a female in a leadership position.
Yeah.
She was great. Her cackle was
amazing. Yeah, she was my first mentor. She was the first female senior leader to pull me into the office and just on the spot, you know, mentor. Like, not negatively, just really, like, speak life into you. You know what I mean? And that's not common for us as young women. So especially to see someone like you. Yeah. So,
yeah. And know that, you know, that picture of you guys, representation matters, you know, that and the shoulder boards you gave me, that's up on my motivation wall. And I'm sure I'm not the only one, you know, those kind of things matter. So thank
but
you guys.
But can I end with the fact that I want to make sure that, especially if you're young and female in this formation, we are very human.
Mm-hmm.
We are very human. We are very broken. We are very, you know, we cry, you know, we shout, we yell. I think I rear-ended somebody yesterday, the first time in 26 years that I got into it. I'm just joking. But no, we're very human. I say that jokingly, but I mean that wholeheartedly, because my daughter said something to me once that really broke my heart, and Callie made me remember this as she was talking. She's like, Mom, you know what? Sometimes it's hard to be your daughter. I was like, why?
Oh, Haley said that to me before too.
Yeah. And I was like, why? And she said, well, Mom, because, you know, she just started naming off all these really great accolades, right? And I was like, oh, baby. Oh, darling. Like, if I could just tell you, like, I was you. You're a better version of what I wish I was as strong as you were at this age. If you only knew, like, who I was when I was your age, you're actually a far better version. But more importantly, let's start talking about Mom's flaws. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm not sharing that enough with you, but it goes to show that I think sometimes you're young and you look at your senior leaders, you're like, oh, I'll never be that. If I was in their shoes, I probably would have done the same. Like, I'm never going to be that. That's, I got this one initial obligation and I'm done. But oh man, we're human. We've been through highs and lows. We have cried just as much as we have succeeded.
Made mistakes.
Ooh, yep. So many, right? And I say that wholeheartedly. Like, I encourage these young people to seek a mentor, find a mentor, find a support group, and keep at it, because we learn just as much from our failures as we have from our successes. Trust and believe.
Well, again, ladies, thank you so much for your time. If you like the content that you've seen here today, please like, share, and subscribe, and check out the next episode of Raven Conversations.